Welcome to the Classic City Sports Podcast.
And McAllister down the left field line. Connor Tate is going to round third. He will score. And rounding third is Blaylock. He will score. And the Dogs rock it off.
If you're looking for the latest Georgia Bulldog news in football, basketball, baseball, and recruiting, then you are in the right place.
It's third down. Bryce Young's career. You need 10. Play clock at 4. From the pocket. Launching downfield. Underthrown and intercepted. Kaylee Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. All the way to the end zone. And Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
Hosted by Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams.
Georgia on the mountaintop. Demons be gone and the drought is over. National champions at long last.
Just sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for these hot takes you're about to listen to.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Classic City Sports. As always, Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams. First off, sorry about the delay, but my boy Jonathan had to go out and be on the radio again today on 92.9 The Game. So we had to kick the show down a little bit, but we're going to give you everything we got now that we are back, and he should be pumped up. He's already kind of got a nice little warm-up from it. I've got a lot of stuff to talk about. Georgia still dominating in the recruiting side of things right now. Just landed Daniel Calhoun. And Georgia's building that brick wall on that offensive line piece by piece with Stacy Searles. So we're going to get into all that and a few other little things here as we go. But Jonathan, how are we feeling?
Good, man. I mean, got to celebrate the 4th of July, one of the best holidays of the year, in my opinion. Can't ever miss out on 4th of July and getting to do that. So got some good time in with the family this week. So rejuvenated and ready to get after. Got a nice little warm-up on the radio, so I'm good to go now. I'm ready to talk some Dogs, and I'm in my groove at this point, so it should be a good show.
Absolutely. Well, let's jump straight into it. Like I just mentioned a second ago, Daniel Calhoun with Georgia. Stacy Searles continues to build that that program and that offensive line up the way that Georgia expects it to be, considering they've had so many big names come through that offensive line room over the years. Stacy Searles really getting into the groove on recruiting side. How do you feel about him now versus when he first got to Athens?
Well, man, heck, every person should feel really good about Stacy Searles at this point, because, you know, the biggest question when he was coming into Athens was, well, during his 3 years with the North Carolina Tar Heels, he gave up 120 sacks over 3 years with his offensive line. So that's an average of 40 sacks a season. They ranked in the bottom tier of the nation in that statistical category. Now he comes to Georgia last year and they give up 9 in 15 games, and they were fourth in the nation in that stat category. So he checked the box on the field. You knew at that point he could get the job done on the field. Heck, his unit almost won the Joe Moore Award this past year and probably should have won the Joe Moore Award. And now you go into this offseason, you're like, well, now can he get the job done on the recruiting trail? Can he get these big guys to come in and commit to the University of Georgia? Well, he just proved that today. He already has his fourth commitment of the class. Daniel Calhoun, as you mentioned, he's not only a top in-state recruit, but he's a top national recruit. I think he's ranked as a top 5 offensive tackle in the country, according to 247 composite rankings. So this is a big name, and there's plenty more big names left on the board that are about to commit this month as well. Nair Daniels is one. Marquez Easley is another one. There are some big names left on the board that Georgia is in a really good standing of landing as well. So there's going to be quite a few names probably added to this commitment list. So Stacy Searles has checked all of the boxes at this point. He has without a doubt solidified himself as a home run hire for Kirby Smart at this point.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, you can't argue with the success that he's had. 2 years in a row, Georgia had a pretty good offensive line unit that could have arguably made a statement to be, you know, winning the best offensive line for the entire season in college football. Didn't get it. Michigan ended up getting both of those. It's only gotten better. Like you just said, it's only gotten better. Like each piece is being added to it. And I think this year, Georgia is about to have one of the best offensive lines they've had in a very long time, from left to right, all the way around. I'm excited to see what's going to happen there moving forward in the next couple of years. I think you're going to continue to see this offensive line be in contention for that award, because it is a standard that's being set. And Kirby has always been extremely good at recruiting as a whole. But part of that isn't just him. It's he goes out and he gets really good assistant coaches that are really good at recruiting as well. And I think that's something you're starting to see at this position now that you haven't seen in a little bit. And, you know, it just, like I said, overall, you get Kirby recruiting extremely well with his offensive guys. I think the only exception was like Todd Monken didn't do, he did a lot with the quarterback recruiting, obviously. But he wasn't known to be visiting offensive linemen or anything like that, or going out and doing that kind of stuff. So I don't know how much Bobo does with all of that right now. But as a whole, Georgia's just building a machine on the recruiting trail with all these assistant coaches being just as hungry as Kirby is.
Yeah, I mean, just think about the list of names that Kirby Smart has hired over the last years. And think about if you think that hire is a hit or if you think that hire is a miss. You have Todd Monken. You brought Will Muschamp on board. You got Coach Ouse outside line as a linebacker coach. Then you also get Fran Brown from Rutgers University. You had Jamila Dye before him. And now you bring in Mike Bobo as well to replace the offensive coordinator. And now you also have Stacy Searles. You have maybe one miss on that list, and it's Jamila Dye, where he was here for a year from West Virginia, and then things didn't really work out, and he went down south. So, I mean, one miss out of what, eight names?
Yep.
Heck, Kirby Smart has figured it out. He is, because, you know, it's important to obviously find the right head coach for your program, a guy that is going to guide your program and help elevate your football program. That is exactly what you are wanting as a head coach. But it's also important that you get a guy that can navigate the waters of hiring a staff and making sure that he is supported by his coaching staff. There were some misses early on in Kirby Smart's career. You know, James Coley, that's an obvious miss. Oh, Brian McClendon, that's another name I didn't even mention. Got him. So another hit at this point. Brian McClendon is without a doubt a hit for Georgia at this point. So many different names and so many hits. You have, like I said, you have one miss maybe in the last 4 years. So that's a really great. And it's one of the many reasons why Georgia continues to have so much success. And like I said, it's important that you not only have a good leader and a good head coach for your football program, but it's arguably even more important that you have a guy that knows how to decipher through the head coaching hires and figure out which ones are the right one. You know, a lot of people are questioning the Stacy Searles hire. Like I said, that got cleared out. People have kind of questioned the Mike Bobo hire. I think that one's going to get cleared out this year very quickly. So at this point, as we say so many different times on this show, is just trust Kirby Smart, because obviously he has things figured out and he knows exactly where he's trying to take this program and he knows the people that he wants to hire to figure it out.
Yeah, I'd say, and you named him a second ago too, but I think the biggest miss that he had has to be James Coley. Because when you go out and hire when you hire a position coach and they're only there for 1 year, it is what it is kind of thing. When you go hire a offensive coordinator and you part ways with them after one season, you know, things weren't going well. We don't know what was going on in that room and during all that. But if you let go of that guy that quick, or you let him leave, and that was one of the most like mundane offenses Georgia's had under Kirby Smart. That one in 2019 was just, it was a miserable season for Georgia football fans and everything. So I think that would be the only big miss that I would give Kirby. I won't even call Jamila Dye that big of a miss. I don't think it was, I mean, because that unit still played well, right? And we still recruited well for that unit. James Coley, on the other hand, it fell apart there.
Yeah, I think Georgia fans were ready to pull their hair out by the end of the year. That's the same year where we played Kentucky in the slopping wet rain and the booze started raining down. Ironically, because it's not like Georgia was going 8-4 that year. Heck, they ended up winning the East and playing in the SEC title game that year. They just happened to run into the freight train of the LSU Tigers. But it's very evident that the offense was an issue and that the offense was not clicking, even like it was with Jim Chaney. So now, but again, you redeem yourself in a major way by bringing in Todd Monken, an NFL mind, who now is back in the NFL. But now you have a foundation for your offense. You have a guy that you can bring in like Mike Bobo, who, one, is a Georgia guy, loves the Dogs. And so, you know, he's going to love being in Athens. He's going to be committed to making sure that Georgia stays on the top of college football. And two, he's keeping things the same. He's not jumping around. He's not making any major changes to this offense. You listen to any offensive player talk this offseason and they're saying same lingo, same offense. It just has Mike Bobo's touch on it. And that's fine. If Georgia wins the 2012 national championship, beats Alabama in the SEC championship game, nobody's ever complaining about Mike Bobo, Stoddard. No one is having any issue with Mike Bobo during his time at Georgia. The man was putting up solid numbers the entire time. He just didn't have the trophies in the trophy case to show for it. Now, there's a good chance that he adds one to his list of accolades, and nobody will ever say another bad thing about Mike Bobo in Georgia.
No, I mean, in his last season at Georgia, before he went off to go be a head coach, he had this, was it either the highest or second highest points per game? Did we beat it this year, or was it just behind it?
Oh, gosh.
I know it was like 40 and some change.
I think his year, 2013, was the most, I would want to say.
I think it was up by like a point. I think this, yeah, I think last year was
small
under
margin.
A small, small margin. But the point of that being is by the time he was done at Georgia, there was a reason he went and got a head coaching job, and that's because he was doing a very good job at Georgia. The offense was clicking. He didn't even have great quarterback situations. After Aaron Murray left, he was stuck with Hudson Mason, and was Grayson Lambert still here then? Or I think that was his last year.
No, that was
year.
Schottenheimer. Schottenheimer was Grayson Lambert, I believe.
Okay, yeah. That one wasn't a great offensive coordinator either. There's been a few out of Georgia that weren't the best. Let me say that. But then you got some good ones over the past couple of years, and now you've got Mike Bobo, who I think is going to succeed at Georgia. He's got all the offensive weapons, and now he's got a foundation set by Todd Monken that he's going to be able to put his own twist on and stuff. But the team knows that system, and they're still going to run a very similar system, I would assume. And I think the sky's the limit for them on this one personally.
Yeah, Dan, you're saying we are going to miss Monken. I think, you'll miss Monken in some capacity, obviously, because that was the greatest offense that Georgia fans have seen in 10 or so years. I mean, Georgia fans were not used to putting up 40-plus points a game on a consistent basis. So, you'll miss him in some capacity just because he was a magician, it seemed like. Every single game, every single week, and it seemed like he had something up his sleeve that just – he knew how to beat opponents. He knew how to expose their weakest points, a defense's weakest points, and he did a great job of executing game plans, and he knew – I think the biggest thing about Todd Monken was he knew how to create with the players that he had. You know, once Stetson Bennett became the consistent starter for the team, he started working his offense around Stetson Bennett's strengths, which was his mobility and his way to create an offense. And so what did he do? He started giving him different launch points, as Brooks Austin would call it, and he starts moving around in the pocket instead of saying, all right, instead of taking a three-step drop back straight down the hash, how about we move him around a little bit, give him some more space, allow him to create within the offense? So, you're going to miss Todd Monken in that capacity. But again, you're not going to miss him in regards to the success that you have on offense, because you have the most weapons you've probably ever had on offense in totality, between offensive line, wide receivers, running backs, tight ends, quarterback. You have the most weapons that you've had in forever. And when you pair that up with a really good offensive coordinator who knows what he's doing and is going to basically be doing the same thing that Todd Monken did, that's a recipe for success. And that's a recipe for a record-setting offense.
Yeah, and I think another thing that people overlook in this situation is Todd Monken came in there, and that was the first time we really saw Kirby Smart just kind of let go of it and let him do what he wanted to do and what he needed to do. And it took the first year, I think it was kind of feeling each other out and getting comfortable. And then after that, I think he proved his point of, hey, I know what I'm doing. Just let me do what I need to do. And
let
I promise
cook,
you,
bro.
Yeah, let me cook. And I promise you, we will succeed. Here's the thing that I love about this situation with Mike Bobo. They have a history and they know each other, and he's going to trust Mike Bobo to do what he needs to do. And I think that's the best thing that he could have in an offensive coordinator, because Kirby's got one of the best defensive minds in all of the game, right? In all of football, he's got one of the best defensive minds, right? His defense has succeeded since day one of him being in Athens. His offense took a little bit to take, he needs a really good offensive coordinator, and he needs somebody he trusts. And that's what he gets in Mike Bobo, is he's got somebody that he knows and he played with back in the day. So he's comfortable letting him do what he needs to do. And I think that's the biggest thing for me when you have a first year offensive coordinator under you, is the fact that you don't have to build that trust. It's already there. And so I think that's why Georgia is going to really not skip a beat on offense. Yeah, it'll be a little different. You'll see some different schemes and some strategy changes maybe, but the foundation's set and he's going to run with it. And I think it's going to be one of your best offensive years that you've had at Georgia in a long time.
Yeah, and you can even tie this back to the Stacey Searles conversation, because an offense is nothing without a good offensive line. I think the biggest move for Georgia this offseason was getting Cedric Van Pran to stay another year. Now, the market for centers in the NFL draft isn't exactly booming. You know, you don't see too many interior offensive line, especially centers, taken in the first round. So maybe it's, especially in this new era of college football, it's probably a thing of like, I'm making some pretty good money while I'm here at Georgia with all these NIL deals. Why not stick around and help my team win a third national championship and make some history and probably still make the same amount of money that I would have this year going into the NFL draft, you know? So that's a big piece. That's a leadership piece, a very vocal guy on that offense. That was evident last year. You know, if you think back to last offseason coming off of the first national championship, Cedric Van Pran was the guy that when they were doing sprints out on the football field leading up to the season, this was back in like May or in the springtime. He was like, hey, take all that national championship stuff down. That's a distraction to us next year. That doesn't matter anymore. Yeah. What matters is what we're going to do this year, and that's going to win another national championship. That's in the past now. We're not worried about what we just did a few months ago. We're worried about what we're going to do in a year from now. And sure enough, results produced. So getting him back was huge, and then also having Tate Ratledge back, Xavier Truss, and now it's a matter of who your two tackles are, but you have some really good options to work with at tackle: Ernest Green, Austin Blask, and Amarius Mims. Amarius Mims is probably going to be a top 50 NFL draft pick after this next year. So if, like I said, your offense is nothing without a good offensive line, you're probably going to have one of the best offensive lines in the country, and that's a great position to be in with a new starting quarterback and an offense that you are looking to just unhinge and let them take off and really do what they do best. And that's going to be score a lot of points. I think this squad can do that. I think in the running game and the passing game, they can find success anywhere they want, and they have a recipe for everything. So again, tying that back to Stacey Searles, his success is what helps Georgia win another national title in 2023.
Absolutely. And talking about what you just said too about keeping the guys, right? Getting SVP for another year. But a name that you just brought up in passing, Amarius Mims, he had entered the transfer portal and everyone thought he was going to either Miami or FSU. And then, you know, and all the NIL money that's down that way and in Florida and stuff too. And he ended up staying. And he stayed and sat when he stayed, right? Yeah. He didn't even start. Guess what? Now he's going to, and like you just said, he's very, very likely to be a first-round draft pick when it's all said and done. That's one of the biggest successes for Georgia's offensive line, and it came from just honestly just being able to keep somebody and have them patiently wait, just like you had at quarterback, right, with Carson Beck and them sitting there and waiting their turn, and now they get their chance, and they can go out there and make themselves, it's up to them to make themselves a first-round draft pick at this point. That was huge for me. Amarius Mims still being on this roster and being able to be one of the starting tackles this year is going to be a huge success for Georgia and the retention of players in the NIL era that we are.
Yeah, and I think this is a good spot in the show to where we can kind of bridge to our next topic, which is we're going to talk about questions that we want answered this season. Not necessarily like, all right, it's time for you to prove this to us or anything of that sort of thing. It's more so just like, let's see, like, this is a question I have about this team this year. Let's see if they can prove it. I would like to see that question answered this year. And so that's all this is. This isn't anything of us saying like, oh, well, Kirby needs to finally prove us that he can do this. I think Kirby Smart has checked nearly every box imaginable at this point. So there's very few things that man hasn't proven to the fans or even the nation that he can't do. So this is just a segment of like, oh, well, I have a question of how the quarterbacks are going to look, something like that. Maybe I just took starter's question right there, but I'll go ahead and throw it to you, Jeremiah. What is one question that you want answered this year after running off of two national titles?
There's one area on this team that I still think there are some question marks on, considering the team is as good as it is. It's kind of nitpicky. When I say it, this is nitpicky because I don't think there's a problem there. I just want to see them take the next step, and that is that running back room, because you were actually talking about this on 92.9 The Game a little bit ago. They haven't had a like front runner guy in a long time. The last time you had it was when DeAndre Swift was here. After he left, you had Holyfield there as well. Those were the last two guys to go over 1,000 yards, and then you've seen it kind of digress at that position for a few years. Now, you've had some great running backs. Don't get me wrong. There are some good ones on the roster. Kendall Milton, I think, could have a really good year if he can stay healthy. Dejon Edwards, I'm excited to see what he does again this year, because I think he's an extremely talented running back that hasn't quite gotten a chance to shine as much as he can. And I think he's going to get a chance this year, being the number one and two punch between him and Milton this year. That's what I'm excited to see. Biggest question mark is, can Kendall Milton stay healthy? But I'm also really looking at some of the younger guys on that team. I think people have forgotten that Andrew Paul was out there just absolutely tearing it up in his freshman season, like in camp and stuff like that, prior to tearing his ACL. Went down, haven't had a chance to see him in a game yet. So hopefully he can be bounced back and be ready to go this fall. I'm really excited to see him. And then Roderick Robinson is another name of a young guy that we haven't been able to see yet, but has had a lot of noise around his name. And then everybody knows Branson Robinson did get a chance to play some last year, and he looked really good every time he got an opportunity. Really started to stand out even more in the national championship game against TCU when it was a blowout. He was getting some runs there. I think he scored 2 touchdowns in that game, did he not?
Yeah, 2 touchdowns.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see some of those younger guys get a chance to do it, but I'm mainly focused on, I still am a believer that Kendall Milton is a great running back. He has just been plagued with injuries. So as all the great coaches will say, your best availability is, or your best ability is your availability, and he hasn't had that yet. So hopefully he can have a full healthy season. And if so, he's a guy that could be, I kind of feel like he would quietly get towards a 1,000-yard season in the same way that Zamir White did. Everyone used to complain about Zamir White, but he'd be on pace for 1,000 yards and scoring a touchdown in like 10 straight games or something like that. But he just wasn't flashy, but he would go out there and grind away yards when you needed him to.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I always point out about Kendall Milton is last year, even when he was banged up, he was the only Georgia running back since Nick Chubb and Sony Michel to have over 75 carries in a season and still average over 6.4 yards per carry. I think those are the numbers. It's around that vicinity. But man, if you're doing something for the first time since those two running backs, you're doing something special. So I think every Georgia fan has been itching to get a full season of Kendall Milton and him being 100% healthy. And this very well might be the year. I think that they were very cautious with him in the spring. And so, you know, once they heard anything about a rumbling of an injury from him, they're like, yeah, all right, you're shut down. We need you in the fall. We don't need you in the spring. We know what you can do, Kendall. We need you healthy when September rolls around. So that was a good move by Georgia. But I think what's pretty telling about how Georgia feels about their running back room is the fact that they brought back Savon Clark out of the transfer portal, a walk-on. And then they brought in the Tennessee running back. I think his last name is Whitehead, another walk-on option. So when you're bringing in two walk-on options into your running back room, that probably indicates that you may not be 100% healthy when the season starts. Just going to go ahead and throw that out there, that you may not see every single headlining Georgia running back healthy when week one rolls around. So you needed some depth. They got some depth, but you have options. That's another good thing. And I think especially, and you have the perfect offensive coordinator really get that running room going again. And it's Mike Bobo. There was so much success with him because partly due to the names that he had during his time at Georgia, he has some really good names to work with this year as well. So you might see your first 1,000 yard rusher, like you said, since Elijah Holyfield and DeAndre Swift, which would be a good sight. And if that's the case, then again, the offense is in really good shape. For me, my question doesn't have anything to do with positions. It doesn't have anything to do with players. It really just has to do with the team overall. And Dan and Zach are kind of getting to the point a little bit, but it's more so, what is the why this year? And I think we'll find this out at SEC Media Days here soon, because Kirby Smart dropped the infamous line last year of, we will not be hunted at the University of Georgia. The hunting will come from the other direction, from us. So that was the why last year is, yeah, we were the national champs, but this year we're not going to be hunted by someone else because we're the top dog in college football. We're still hunting after everybody else, and we're acting like we are inferior to everybody else. That's how we're going to play. We're going to play like we are still fighting for our lives to win that national title. And so this year, now that you've won two, this is where things get interesting, because you've proven it now that you've done it back-to-back times. Maybe what they're really focusing on this year is that you still have a shot at history of being just the second team in college football history to win three in a row. But still, everybody talks about the hangover of a national championship. And actually, Georgia has the best record of any team. I think it is. Georgia had the best record of any team coming off a national title outside of Alabama, who won it back to back a couple years ago. So that's pretty telling that you know that they can rebound. Kirby Smart and his staff can really rally those troops and get it ready for another season. But now that they have two on their hands, a lot of them have two rings on their hands outside of the freshmen, things get a little more interesting now. Like, what is your why this year? What are you focusing on? What keeps you guys hungry to go chase after that third ring? And what keeps these guys focused on the task at hand? You know, Smart always says, you're a week away from humility. What is going to help keep those players focused on the fact that, hey, we're a week away from humility. It doesn't matter who, everybody says our schedule is soft. Everybody says our only test this year is against Tennessee late in the season. But Georgia knows as well as anybody else that if you sleep on one week like you did against South Carolina a few years ago, then you're going to get slapped in the face pretty hard when you think you might be towards the top of college football. And it happens really quickly. It almost happened in Missouri last year. So can you keep the momentum going? Can you keep those guys level-headed And I want to know what the why is this year. That's what I want to know. I want to hear that Kirby Smart quote at SEC Media Days this year that gets me fired up and ready to run through a brick wall. That's what I'm looking for this year, Stoddard.
Well, here's the thing. So Kirby Smart does a really good job at motivating his team. He finds a way. He, you know, the whole 7-5 thing is what you had everybody try. Like, he was preaching to them. They want you to go 7-5. They want you to go 7-5. Well, guess what? The media is kind of helping his point of view right now, because every time I turn on ESPN, every time I see somebody, you know, one of the talking heads saying something, it's they're putting Michigan ahead of them. They're putting Bama ahead of them. They're putting Ohio State ahead of them. They're doubting Georgia already before the season has started. And I think Kirby's going to walk in that locker room and say, first of all, have the mindset that Cedric Van Praan had after the first one. That means nothing. Get it out of your mind. Get the logos out of here. That you don't wear it. You don't. That doesn't mean anything now, because now you've got to go earn another one. And nobody cares what you did last year if you don't do it again this year, if you can't go out there and be that team again this year. And I think he's going to walk in there and say, hey, guys, everybody that isn't you, everyone that's not a Georgia fan wants to see you lose. Don't give them what they want, because if that happens, that's all anyone will be talking about. And you'll be embarrassed. You'll feel like you failed and the season won't be good anymore. And like, you will feel like it's a wasted season because you failed and everyone got what they wanted and everyone got to say, ha, told you they would collapse, told you they couldn't do it again. And like you said, they have the chance to go make history and go be the second team since, what was it, like 19, it was like 1940 or something.
1945, I think, Minnesota did it.
When Minnesota did it. And so you're one of the only two teams to ever do it. And it's been almost 80 years since it's happened. And guess what? You're also doing it during the college football playoff era. And you're doing it where nobody else has even won two national championships like you have in the college football playoff era. And it's your last chance to do something like that before it goes to a 12-team playoff, because that's also just around the corner and it's going to be a different environment. Take the opportunity to be elite right now and make it no doubt that you are the pinnacle of college football and that everything, even moving forward with the 12-team playoff and everything, has to run through Athens to get to that championship trophy.
Yeah, I think something that, like you said, all the noise in the media is kind of maybe what can feed. I don't know that they really pay that much attention to the media like people think that they do, but you have to think that they do notice it when they themselves are involved. And what I'm talking about is, like, when you see these people coming out with their SEC quarterback rankings, are you seeing Carson Beck in the top five? Are you seeing Carson Beck in the top six? Not many people are putting Georgia's future QB1 up there on those high lists. So maybe they are, and Carson's, you're like, hey, you may be the starting quarterback of the back-to-back national championships. Nobody believes in you. Nobody thinks that you're going to go out there and average 41 points again like we did last year. Nobody thinks you're going to lead this offense to another national title. Nobody thinks anything of you. Everybody thinks that Spencer Rattler, Joe Milton, KJ Jefferson, they think all those guys are better than you. So what do you have to say about that? What are you going to go show? And then you have guys like Reese Davis and Kirk Herbstreit. Reese Davis saying that Michigan is currently his number one this offseason. And then also Kirk Herbstreit saying that he thinks LSU and Alabama are ahead of Georgia in the offseason right now, heading into this new season, which I don't know why. I don't know what caused him to say that in regard to – due to the fact that Georgia did just win back-to-back national titles. But to Reese Davis's point, he even said, it's all because I have question marks about Georgia's quarterback play. I haven't seen any of them play a snap really yet, and I want to see that, and I want those questions answered before I comfortably say Georgia is the best team in the nation. So there's a lot of things that can be said right now. You're right. There's still plenty of propaganda out there for Georgia to go out there and make some noise and prove some people wrong.
Well, here's the thing about Carson Beck, too, is – and I understand, like, I'm not going to be the Georgia fan that comes out here and says, well, he needs to be top five in those lists and stuff. Because what justifies him being there right now, right? When you've got Spencer Rattler, you've got Will Rogers out there, and you've got, you know, all these other guys that have KJ Bolt or KJ Jefferson, you've got all these guys that have been there and actually showed you what they can do in a game. He's been in games, but it's been garbage time, and he's played backups and he's done all this stuff. He hasn't proved it yet. So I'm the one that I saw a list today, and he was in the top 10. And I'm the type of person that goes, yeah, if I was Kirby, you haven't earned it yet. Go show them that you should be on that list in the top five. Show them that you should be number one. Go make that statement. And I think that's the kind of stuff that these competitors, they fuel off of it, right? Whether or not they want to admit the fact that they want to be on the top part of that list, they're not going to come out and publicly say it. But if you've seen it, you're going to be like, I should be on that list. And you should go out there and show them that you should be on that list. And I think that's what he's going to be fed off of. Who was it? Who'd you say they had ahead of Georgia that it was Michigan and
Michigan was from Reese Davis. He said Michigan is preseason number one. And then Kirk Herbstreit said LSU and Alabama are ahead of everybody else in the SEC.
I saw that part. So with Reese, though, I mean, talking about the quarterback situation, what have we seen from a Michigan quarterback that tells you they are the number one team in the country? That's what I want to know. Because, yeah, we've seen some play from their quarterbacks, but there's nothing we saw from them that said they are number one. That doesn't make any sense. And Bama doesn't even have a quarterback right now. They're trying to figure that out. LSU does have Jaden Daniels, and he is a good quarterback. He will be one of the better quarterbacks this season. I can comfortably say that as well. But LSU has some stuff to figure out as a whole there. They started to play a little bit better. They got down into the SEC championship game. They've got to replicate that, though. And it's not easy to do. Last year was, what's his name? With the head coach. I just blanked on it. From Notre Dame. What's his name?
Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly. I almost said Chip Kelly.
Woo. Brian Kelly. He got 1 year. He hasn't, you know, now it's replicating that. You come in your first year and you do something good. Let's see if you can replicate it. That's what I want to see from them. So those other three teams being named, I don't have anything that justifies saying that they are better than Georgia just because Georgia's got a new quarterback. That quarterback's been on this roster for 3 years at this point.
Yeah, so like I said, there's still plenty of propaganda out there. If Georgia wants to use that, if they do indeed use the bulletin board material, if they do pay attention to all that nonsense, then yeah, there's plenty of it still out there, even after ripping off two back-to-back national titles. I'll go ahead and give you a hot take, though, about Carson Beck. I think by week five, Carson Beck is going to be leading the Heisman race. I think he's going to be everybody's number one Heisman pick at that point in the season. And if he's not, it's going to be because Brock Bowers is the number one player in the Heisman race at that point. Yeah. So that's what I'll tell you right now. 5 weeks into the season, Carson Beck is going to be the headliner for the Heisman Trophy.
That is a bold – I say it's bold, but I'm on the same page as you. I think we've sat here several times saying he's very capable of going out there and putting up the same stat line that Stetson just did. And if he does, he will be in the he will be a Heisman finalist, and he will have a good argument to win it because – yeah, I mean, you've got Caleb Williams out there, so it'd be tough. There are some really good names that'll be in the conversation.
When they give it to him back to back, though. That's my whole thing.
I think he's going to have a harder time taking it away from Brock Bowers if he has the season we think he's going to have. Honestly, Brock Bowers is the name. Like he's the one that's going to go out there and be your first 1,000 yard receiver since Terrence Edwards. That's what's going to happen with him because they are absolutely going to feed him the ball. And Carson Beck is going to be very capable of getting it into his hands. So I'm excited to see what this offense does as a whole. I think they're going to put up some incredible numbers to go along with the defensive side of the ball that we know Georgia has.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to do one more topic before we get off tonight. And it's all about a comment that Georgia's future quarterback said, Dylan Raiola, and what he was saying about committing to Georgia and repping the G and kind of what that means to go to the University of Georgia. Why do you pick the Dogs? And he made this comment. I'm going to read the quote. It says, and this is what Dylan Raiola said. That G is known worldwide. They got a saying, always repping the G. I learned some things on my official. Atlanta is right there, the biggest airport hub in the world. They got all the big businesses you think of are based out of Atlanta. There's a lot of resources. And really doesn't seem like a hot take or anything that would merit trending on social media. But when you bring in Georgia Tech fans into the conversation, then anything is possible. Anything is possible being blown way out of proportion. And that's exactly what Georgia Tech fans did because, you know, the only thing that they can hold on to this point is they can hold on to the fact that their school is right smack in the middle of Atlanta. And I don't know why that is a flex. I don't know why they treat that like it's a flex. But for some reason, if you come after the city of Atlanta and you try and claim that, they are going to smack you silly or attempt to because that's all they have at this point. And so they got a little mad, Stoddard, when Raiola made comments about Athens being close to Atlanta. Didn't even say that Georgia is Atlanta or anything like that, but they flipped it and they took offense to that. And so I just thought it was really funny that these Tech fans, we'll call this talking season. That's what we're going to call this right now. We haven't brought this segment back. We're going to go into talking season right now. Tech fans, this would not have been on my bingo card for this offseason, Stoddard. Tech fans complaining about Dylan Raiola saying Atlanta is in close vicinity to Athens. A factual statement, geographically speaking, correct?
Very correct.
So I just thought it was so funny because, I mean, if you read, and Tech fans are supposed to be smart, supposedly. They're supposed to be the book smart ones. If you read the quote.
That graduates are smart, not always the fans.
Yeah, not the fans. The graduates themselves are supposed to be smart. But if you read the quote itself, he's not saying that the University of Georgia is in Atlanta or that he's claiming Atlanta by going to the University of Georgia. No, he's just saying, yeah, I can get in my car and within an hour and a half, I can be in Atlanta, into one of the most resourceful cities in all of the nation. That's all he's saying. So, but even then, I think Georgia probably does have much more of a claim to the city of Atlanta than Tech does right now. I think if you polled majority of college football fans right now, they couldn't even tell you where Georgia Tech is located, if I had to guess.
Well, let's look at it this way, right? The point was there's a lot of resources out of the city of Atlanta that can help him in different ways, right? Well, let's talk about that, because guess what? Coke, right there in Atlanta, guess what? They're huge sponsors of Georgia football. So there's one. Number two, Delta, right there in their hub is Atlanta. Guess what? They're the ones flying Georgia to national championship games and mm-hmm. giving them the special treatment and putting Vince Dooley's name on an airplane that flies them to the national championship game in LA. That's the resources he's talking about. The name of the University of Georgia has so much pull that, yeah, it may be an hour and a half, but let's all be real here. Who doesn't drive an hour and a half to go places like that, right? Like, it just, how many Tech fans live directly in the city of Atlanta? They probably don't, right?
Majority of Georgia fans probably, there's more Georgia fans in Atlanta than there are Georgia Tech fans.
Yeah. So there's all those resources. The point of it is he has those resources available to him within an hour and a half. And I saw one Tech fan who was like, I hope he enjoyed talking about the airport, right? I hope he enjoys that hour and a half ride to the airport. Man, it's, if you live in Atlanta, it's still probably going to take you 45 minutes.
No doubt. I mean, and it's going to take you another 45 to get through security anyways.
Like, I just thought it was hilarious because all of a sudden, and some other Georgia fans were saying, did y'all know that Georgia Tech had a social media presence? Like, they had fans out here? Finding out today, just because they finally saw something they wanted to take claim to.
Now's our chance, guys. Let's go.
They're just starting to sound, for the Tech fans out there, if you happen to see this, you probably won't, but if you do, think about what you're, when you make the claim to Atlanta like that, you're just starting to sound like Jeff Collins, the 404 for the culture, and making that your brand. That's what he tried to do, and it didn't work out very well for you. Well, I think Georgia could use that as more of a brand for them than you could right now, to be honest.
Well, it's funny too, is even after Jeff Collins attempted to make Atlanta like their brand of Georgia Tech football, if you go and look at any of the social media accounts of the Atlanta Braves, of the Atlanta Hawks, the Atlanta Falcons, heck, probably even Atlanta United, they're showing love to the Dogs. That's who they're showing love to on social media. Hey, good luck in the national championship. Go get another one for us. Trey Young's out there repping the G sometimes. I see him sometimes with a Georgia G on his chest. Atlanta Braves, they love them some Dogs. All of the Atlanta sports teams, they seem to really love Kirby Smart and the University of Georgia. Heck, they brought Jordan Davis in to throw the first pitch. Stetson Bennett got to throw out the first pitch this year.
Yep.
Kirby Smart got to have his own moment with the Atlanta Braves this year, talking to Brian Snitker. Like, obviously, they are trying to pull in as much Georgia love as possible and combine those two brands, two national brands at this point. So I think Georgia Tech is a much more little brother than they really think they are, especially when we're talking about the culture of Atlanta and whatnot. So I just thought it was – I think you're right. Georgia Tech fans are like, this is our final moment of the offseason to where we get to show everybody that we do exist. Georgia Tech fans are out here still showing love to the Yellow Jackets. Maybe they're on the come up, probably not, but – I mean, like I said, of all things to happen this offseason, Tech fans arguing about Georgia's quarterback commit about Atlanta and the University of Georgia was not at all in my expectations.
No, absolutely not. And don't forget that even before Georgia won the national championship, after the Braves won their World Series, Blooper and Jock Peterson were in Athens for a game on the sideline before Georgia even won a national championship. I don't remember seeing Blooper and anyone go to a Georgia Tech game. If correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, I'm just saying you can make your claim for the city of Atlanta all you want, but the city of Atlanta claims Georgia, the University of Georgia. That's all I'm saying.
Without a doubt. Well, guys, that is going to do it for this week's episode. Got to cover a lot of great content for you guys. Discuss Stacy Searles, how he is a home run hire at this point. We discussed Georgia's recent commit, Daniel Calhoun, an offensive lineman, one of the best in the country. A few more on the horizon coming this way, so stay tuned for that. And then we also got to talk about some of the questions that we want answered this year. What is Georgia's why? Is Georgia's running back room going to start creeping back in to that national standard that we were so used to as fans? And then we got to close it out with some good old slander and some shade thrown to the Georgia Tech fans because, you know, everybody everybody needs that for their daily dose of hatred. But that is going to do it for us, guys. Make sure to like and subscribe if you haven't already. Do all those good things for us. You guys have been blowing up the comment section as always. We love how active you guys are every single week for us showing support. We appreciate that. Right there below, those are our Twitter handles. You should follow them for show updates and what we got going on. Like today, you would have known that I was on the radio beforehand, and we're going to be postponed a little bit. So that's great information to know. So if you hit those, if you follow those Twitter accounts right there, any single one of them, you will stay up to date with all the news around the podcast. So we appreciate you guys for listening. We appreciate you guys for all of the love and support. And Stoddard, you can close us out.
As always, keep it classy in the Classic City, and we will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Classic City Sports. Take a second to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. Feel free to reach out to the Classic City Sports Crew on Twitter with any topics you'd like discussed. You can reach out to Jeremiah at The Stodfather, to Jonathan at Dr_JWill, and make sure to follow at Classic City Pod for show updates. Check back next week for a brand new episode. In the meantime...
To the stewards, which express the sentiments of the entire Bulldog Nation.